Hello, and on today's show, I'll be shining the spotlight on a great international artist of our time, saxophonist Jan Garbarek. But first up, let's go back to the source with one of Jan's key inspirations. It's the mighty John Coltrane, and this is My Favorite Things. John Coltrane in October 1960, and My Favorite Things from the album of the same name, but also out on the compilation album called The Very Best of the Atlantic Years. And I'll be speaking to Jan Garbarek, who expresses his admiration for John Coltrane and cites him as a major influence, and he also talks about his early experiences as a young teenager breaking into the music scene in Norway. Well, now we hear highlights from his recent concert in London with his remarkable quartet. So, from the performance at the Royal Festival Hall recorded at last year's London Jazz Festival, the Jan Garbarek group are Rainer Brunninghaus on piano, Yuri Daniel on bass, the highly charismatic and unique Trelot Goethe on drums and percussion, and Jan Garbarek on saxophone. And this is their rendition of the Norwegian folk artist Mary Boine's composition, Gula Gula. Thank you. The effervescent Yann Gabarit Group in concert at the Royal Festival Hall last November, and Gula Gula featuring Indian percussion maestro Trilok Gurtu. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome Yann Gabarit to Jazz Lineup. Welcome, Yann. Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Mary Boiner is the composer of that piece, played so enticingly by your group there, Yann. And it leads me to ask about when you first started to incorporate folk music into your craft.
I think the latter half of the 60s, I suppose.
Right.
We were sort of hanging out with folk musicians here in Norway, but there was one musician in particular who really pointed the way for me, and that was the American trumpet player Don Cherry. And he visited Oslo 67, 68, something like that, I expect. And he invited myself and my colleagues for a radio recording. And he asked if we knew some folk musicians, and we were surprised, but we said yes. And then he, just right there, very spontaneously, he organized a whole studio concert, and we all improvised, and it was very free, and that gave me a direction when it came to folk music.
Where had your mind been before? Because I know you were very into the avant-garde with Peter Brosman and Albert Eiler, and the tradition, of course.
Well, it all started with John Coltrane for me, but then after that came the what I at the time used to call the Holy Trinity. You know, that was Pharoah Sanders, Archie Shepp, and Albert Eiler. I enjoyed their music tremendously, and then came Art Ensemble of Chicago and all that stuff, and no, it was a great time, very inventive.
You had a group called the Esoteric Circle, and that particular album was produced by George Russell. You had a great relationship with that fantastic American composer.
Oh, indeed, yes. We have this jazz festival here in Norway in a city called Molde. And I was 17 at the time. I went to a jam session there, which the young musicians usually did. And then suddenly I heard some really strange sounds behind me when I was playing with my eyes closed, and the energy sort of skyrocketed, you know, and I looked behind me and there was George playing the piano suddenly. And then afterwards he asked me if I would join him for join his band touring or recording or whatever. And of course I wasn't allowed by my parents. I went to high school at the time, you know, so I couldn't do it, but in fact, he sent me a letter, and he sent all his music and invited me to radio recordings, wherever he had those, and TV recordings and so on. So I couldn't travel with him, but I could join him for these special occasions. And then I got his book, and I learned about his ideas concerning music and music theory, which was my first encounter with that sort of thing.
And so how were you studying jazz beforehand? Because this is in a time when you listen to the records and you learn the solos and you learn the tunes and you play with your friends and build up your ability to play in an organic way. Is this what you were doing?
Not really. I think I was too lazy for that. I listened to the music, I enjoyed it, and I played, but I played very freely. You know, there was no discipline, no system, nothing. I knew absolutely nothing about what was going on. But I liked the sound of it, and that's what I was aiming for, just out of the blue, you know.
Sure. And was it the meeting with George Russell that changed you, that gave you more discipline or set you on a path to knowing some of the principles of theory and so on?
Yes, it was my first encounter with musical theory, and it gave me the tools to analyze things and to also the tools to create things, you know, and more consciously, I would say. So it was very important for me.
One of the big experiences that brought you to the world stage was working with Keith Jarrett in his famous European Quartet. How did that come about?
I was in Stockholm playing with George Russell, and we had a night off, and we were looking in the newspaper seeing who was playing at the club, you know, and there was Charles Lloyd Quartet.
Right.
And we didn't know if this was old-style jazz or new or whatever, but someone remembered that Charles Lloyd had played with Cannonball Adderley, so it was modern music, so it was worthwhile to go and listen. And sure enough, there was Keith and Jack DeJohnette, and I don't remember actually who played, Cecil McBee maybe on bass.
On the bass, yeah.
And it was a fantastic trio, and I, from that moment on, you know, I've been Keith's biggest fan ever. So he visited Norway frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I got to hear him. He got to hear me also. And then in 1970, I started recording for ECM. In 1972 or 3, I think, he recorded for ECM also. And then I suppose the idea came up, we might do something together.
Well, we're going to talk more about your relationship with Jarrett and with ECM in particular, but we're going to return to your concert at the Royal Festival Hall, and we're going to hear two pieces penned by you. The first is called Ace, which harmonically to me has shades of the classic Weather Report, and then that's followed by Red Dust, which is set up by the drums of Trelot Gurtu, with a playful exchange between pianist Rainer Brunninghaus and bassist Yuri Daniel. Let's have a listen now to Ace, followed by Red Dust.
Thank you. Thank you.
Red Dust, preceded by Ace, both written by my special guest Jan Gabarek, and featuring a stunning band with Rainer Brunninghaus on keyboards, Yuri Daniel on the bass, and percussion maestro Trilok Gertu on the drums, percussion and tabla. This is a band you're particularly happy with.
Oh, I am, yes. They're great musicians, and they're great travel companions as well. So, you know, nothing to just to enjoy the whole situation, really. You're together all the time, you know. You eat together, you travel together, you play together, sound checks and so on. So it's very important that it's a nice, relaxed feeling in the group. Sure. I don't really like too much confrontation and drama, you know.
Absolutely. Sound is a big factor in your craft. Has that always been in the forefront of your mind from the moment you picked up the saxophone?
I was 14 and I heard this music on the radio, which turned out to be John Coltrane. And so that was the sound I wanted, you know, and I started, you know, hassling my parents to get a saxophone, but they really didn't want to buy me a saxophone because it makes a lot of noise. And we were living in this condominium built just after the war and wafer thin walls and so on, so they thought about the neighbors, and they were quite right, by the way. But finally I got a tenor saxophone and I started playing what I thought at the time like Coltrane.
Right, sure.
Yeah, but not really, you know.
Absolutely, we have to imitate our heroes and get into their skin, so to speak, and that's just the joy of it.
Very early on, I started going to the few clubs that were in Oslo at the time. And this American sax player, Dexter Gordon, had moved to Copenhagen.
Right.
Which is quite nearby. So he came very often to Norway to play. And he played with basically the same musicians I played with in the end, you know, when he was here, local guys. And his sound has been a tremendous influence on my playing. You know, that's really... It's a massive, really, what shall I say, it's like metal, you know, the whole thing is so solid and fat. And so Coltrane, Dexter, that's along with all these other musicians I mentioned earlier, and the whole history, really. I have to say, when I was young, I listened to all the players that were mentioned in any jazz book and so on, and I picked up a little bit from everyone, I suppose.
Dexter Gordon's influence on Coltrane is so poignant, and if Dexter is the grandfather, then John Coltrane is definitely the son.
Yeah, I would say so.
What does that make you, son to Coltrane?
Well, I suppose he has a whole bunch of sons spread around the world. I mean, in metaphorically, of course.
Yes, of course.
I think there's several generations of jazz musicians, especially saxophone players, of course, that have been inspired by his playing and taking up that type of music because of him, really.
Sure. Did you get a chance to spend a lot of time with Dexter Gordon then?
I suppose I could have, but I was too shy and too young, you know, because the guys I played with were much younger than me. I'm talking about when I was 15, 16, 17, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was a big hero.
Sure.
He was too much of a hero for me to approach him, really. These days it's a little different. I think the young musicians have an easier time, you know, approaching the older musicians and their heroes.
Yeah.
At that time that was just unheard of, you know, to present yourself to such an icon like that.
It's true. I can definitely understand that. Well, we're going to return to the concert at the Royal Festival Hall in London, and it's the grooving tick-tock of Pendant, which features you on the tenor saxophone. Tell us a little bit about Pendant.
Well, Pendant is just this little rhythm, I thought. I think it's a Bengali rhythm, really. Mm-hmm. And I sat, I had a piano in front of me, I listened to that rhythm, and I had this little figure, you know, this little ostinato, mm-hmm. coming up, and then I thought, well, I could do something a little bit askew on top of that, and the piece came out quite easy, and it's been something we've been doing now for a while together.
Thank you. Thank you.
The grooving TikTok of Pendant by my special guest Jan Gabarek. Interesting collaborations is a feature of your diverse and varied artistry. You spent a remarkable few years collaborating with the Hilliard Ensemble, but what led you there?
Well, I've been recording for ECM for a few number of years, and at some point the Hilliards also started to record for ECM, and I was in the studio in Norway doing something, and Manfred put on the tape, and I enjoyed that. The only thing I've actually studied in my life is I went to this composer here in Oslo and learned a little bit about vocal music of that era, you know, that they sing. So I appreciate very much the music and, as of course, especially the way they performed it, which I told Manfred, and he said, just out of the blue, said, maybe we can do something together at some point. And I said, well, yeah. And then nothing more was said about that. And usually these things really come to very anything much, but then obviously the Hilliards also had the idea that they said that might be interesting, and we agreed not to do the recording right away, but to meet up in some suitable place and see what would happen. And so we traveled to Austria to this monastery up high up in the mountains there. They have a nice little chapel, good sound. And the Hilliards had a bunch of music paper with them, with these old pieces, and they very casually gathered around I don't call it the font, the baptizing font there, put the music down, started to sing, and I listened for a minute, and then I played with them for the next minute and a half, and we stopped and said, yeah, let's do it. This could be fun, you know. So we found another time a few months later at the same place, and then it was a proper recording with microphones and tape recorders and whatever. And actually I felt very good about the whole thing. I thought, you know, it would maybe interest a few hundred people, you know, this music, what we did. But I was proud, you know. I thought this was very nice, very special. And then after a few weeks after the release, there were rumors going that there was some kind of buzz, you know. There was many people bought the album. There was some interest. It was played on the radio, this and that, and then we were asked to do concerts, and which was a pleasure to do and very easy to do also, because there was no amplification. Just bring a saxophone and some music and and do the concert. So we've been doing that for, I don't know, almost about 18 years or so, until the Hilliards retired.
Wow. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, you might say that. Now it's history for me also.
Well, I'll treasure this conversation, and as will all the listeners, I'm sure. Thank you so much, Jan Gabarek, for speaking with me.
Thank you. Thanks.
And to close, something peacefully contemplative from Jan Gabarek and the Hilliard Ensemble from the album Officium, and this is Pace Mihi Domine.